Welcome to
America's Cannabis Conversation,
where you can hear experts from all facets of the cannabis business as to what's happening in this exploding industry. Keep yourself informed. Join the conversation. Now, this is Dan Perkins with your America's Cannabis Conversation Quick News. San Francisco, California, from the mayor's office. To be clear, 420 will not be tolerated this year. Do not come to San Francisco to celebrate. We will cite people. We will arrest people if necessary. Order food, watch Netflix, and stay at home and be safe. Richmond, Virginia. Virginia became the latest state to decriminalize marijuana after Democratic Governor Ralph Northam signed a sweeping criminal justice legislative package into law on Sunday. The legislation will decriminalize simple possession of pot and create a $25 civil penalty. It will also sear the records of convictions and prohibits employers from inquiring about past convictions. Every Virginian deserves access to a fair and equitable criminal justice system, said Northam in a statement. These bills combat mass incarceration, increase support for returning citizens, and ensures that those who have paid their debt to society have a meaningful and second chance. I thank the General Assembly for working with us to build a more just and inclusive Commonwealth. Springfield, Illinois. Illinois stores sold nearly $36 million worth of recreational marijuana in March, despite coronavirus. Even amid the coronavirus pandemic, Illinois marketplace shops sold almost $36 million in cannabis products in March, according to a report from the State Department of Finance and Professional Regulation, who released the information on Thursday. More than 812,000 adult-use marijuana products were sold in the 31-day period. While the majority of those sales, 27 million, came from in-state buyers, out-of-state visitors accounted for about $8.8 million of sales. By comparison, Illinois sold about $35 million worth of cannabis in February and nearly $40 million during the first month of sales in January of 2020. Toy Hutchison, the state's cannabis czar, said in a press release, three straight months of consistent adult use of cannabis sales show that there is and will continue to be a strong support and demand for customers for this product. Ohio medical cannabis sales hits a record of $13 million in March. Medical marijuana dispensaries in Ohio sold almost $13 million of product in March, setting an all-time record for 1 month as business surged during the coronavirus pandemic. During a mid-March week, medical marijuana dispensaries in Ohio recorded $3.8 million in sales, by far the most ever sold in a single week since the medical cannabis became legal in the state in 2016. Medical marijuana dispensaries are considered essential businesses in Ohio, so they're permitted to keep their doors open during the pandemic. We are pleased to announce the W420 Radio Network is now on 6 days a week. Every day at 7 a.m., you can get a download of a one-on-one interview with an industry leader. In addition, on Wednesday mornings at 7 a.m., you'll get a new America's Cannabis Conversation Quick News. And let's see who's on the program today. Joining the conversation today is Cody Sanchez, who is a managing director of Entourage Effects Capital. In our conversation, Cody talks about the difficult decisions you have to do when considering the expenses in a difficult time in the marketplace like we're experiencing now. Then we have Nick Richards, who's been on our show before. He's an attorney, but he's also a former IRS trial attorney. And he's going to talk about how the implications of the new bailout package is going to affect your ability to apply for grants or loans. Next, we have Thornton Rudolph, PhD from the University of Iowa, who will talk about his experience of using both CBD and THC in the treatment of multiple sclerosis. Our last conversation is with Stuart Tomcock, who is the Vice President in charge of Human Nutrition and Plus CBD Oil, which is produced by CV Science. He's going to talk about how we make sure what we're taking is safe. Let's join the conversation. Welcome back to the conversation. And joining us today, again, is Cody Sanchez. She's the managing partner of an investment banking firm that deals with cannabis companies. And we've asked her to come back to the show to talk about what does a cannabis company need to do between now and whenever the daylight comes to get ready for the next phase of their business. So, Cody, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you. So, three steps. One, I would go to sequoia.com, which is one of the largest VCs out there, because all firms in cannabis are really still startups. Look at their financial modeling that shows what to do in various cases of impact to your business for COVID-19 and what sales could mean across the board. The second thing I would do is take those models and look at, can your business continue to survive in current state with, let's say, a 50% decrease in your sales? And what most, you know, of our portfolio companies would tell me is, no, it can't. And so that means the third step is you've got to start thinking about, where do you make cuts? And can you start with fat and then move to muscle and then move to bone? Because you want to sort of work your way through the areas of the business that are easiest to cut with the least impact to the business and its survival.
What do you think that, what is the easiest thing to cut?
Well, the very first thing I would be doing, and, you know, am doing with our portfolio company, is renegotiating every single contract and monthly payment we have. So if we have a PR agency, I'm calling them and renegotiating the fee, and I'm trying to have it. I'm trying to have them experience the same decrease in sales we're going to have from our business relationship. I would do the same thing with trying to negotiate your rents across the board, any sort of services that you utilize. And then I think the second item to do there is deferment. So if you know, you can't get them to cut now, get them to defer some of those payments, put yourself on a payment plan. So those are the very first areas I would take a whack at. And then I would also look myself in the eye very intensely and ask myself, where in the business have we allowed ourselves to get fat? Where in the business have we added things that are not really necessary? And those are the second things that go.
I have to ask you, what's the bone?
Well, the bone's tough. I mean, the hardest thing to do is to do layoffs and furloughs in a business. And so anytime you have to, you know, fire people or lay people off or ask them to take less money, that has an impact that people don't forget in their brains. So if you're going to make those moves, and many companies need to in order to survive, it's okay to do that. You need to rip it off like a Band-Aid. You need to think about the plan, how you're going to communicate it, why you're making these cuts, how it's going to be better for everyone across the business long term in order to survive. And then, ideally, try to make the cuts all at once. The worst thing you can do is paper cut a business to death by not being able to make the tough moves early and fast.
I'm going to play devil's advocate, if you don't mind. Because the last time you were on, we were talking about how, and I think you used the number, that overall sales are up 78%. In the cannabis space. And we know in Illinois and Ohio and Florida, California, Florida, a lot of states around the country, more so in those states that are medical only, that business is actually up through the coronavirus pandemic. So should you be cutting as a matter of course, even if you're not on the verge of bankruptcy, that you got money in the bank, your sales are good, should you make cuts anyway? And if you're going to make cuts, what do you do with the savings?
Yeah, it's a great question. So you, in my opinion, if you have 12 to 18 months of cash to run at current levels and to continue to grow and expand your business, even with the change in potential sales revenue, then it's time to double down on the business and not to make cuts. The problem is a lot of cannabis companies were running really low on cash coming into this. And so any shock to the business could be life-threatening. And so this is where the art comes in to being a leader, and it's very lonely during recessions to be one, of deciding, you know, do we think that we have enough cash to weather the storm and protect the business? And that's the dance you have to do. If you have plenty of capital and room to run, then right now is a great time to go and grab market share. There are some companies that I've seen in this amount. Unfortunately, as you know, and your listeners know, for every dollar that you make in cannabis, you have to push out the dollar that you receive, typically 60 to 90 days, because you don't get paid for 60 to 90 days for your receivables. And so even if they're making a ton of money right now, it costs them a ton of money to make that, because there's this float from the moment that they sell something to the moment they get paid for it. And so it's just something to keep in mind that, you know, people think, yeah, sales at all-time high, this is amazing, and it is, but it costs money to grow.
I understand we've had some tax attorneys on the show, and they talk about how people have early on incorporated themselves with LLCs, which makes it almost impossible to sell if you've got a bankruptcy issue. C corporations, S corporations are close to LLCs, but C corporations allow you to virtually walk away without any liability. But I've asked a number of experts, and I'll ask you, in most of the jurisdictions around the country, whether they be cities, counties, or states, there are limitations on the number of dispensary licenses that are issued, growing licenses mm-hmm. that are issued. Is this a time, if you have some money in the bank, to begin acquiring licenses, not necessarily businesses, but licenses, so that if you want to expand when things turn around, is this a good time to buy, and can you buy them a lot cheaper than what the person who originally bought them for?
Yeah, it's a great question. So what you're not seeing that. You're not seeing people go out and acquire licenses anymore. I think the license aggregation phase is largely done in cannabis on a national scale. I think what's more likely, what you're more likely to see, is there are a lot of businesses that are in business right now that are struggling. And maybe, for instance, there are dispensaries that haven't figured out delivery. You know, maybe they're delivery services that don't make enough money but have a ton of sales and have to figure out how to manage that. And so those are the businesses that are going to be bought. I don't see a lot of people in cannabis right now buying non-revenue driving businesses because the industry has been so capital constrained. So
right.
I think the more likely thing we're going to see are good businesses with good business leaders that have revenue and maybe are driving close-ish to profitability are going to mm-hmm. be bought, and those who don't have it that are distressed, there's going to be a lot of players coming in to take over distressed companies, including us.
Okay, so when we look at that, and I say to you, let's separate the market. I know it's oversimplification, but the haves and the have-nots. The people that mm-hmm. are in the markets are like Illinois and Ohio and Florida, California, that are doing well, that they're increasing their sales, which means they're increasing their cash flows. They're going mm-hmm. to do, they're doing well. The first question is, with the haves, will it continue after we go back to work, or will their business fall off? And number mm-hmm. two, those who are hanging on and go through to the bone cuts that you're talking about, do you think coming out the other side that this industry will recover?
It's a great question. On the second question, that one's easy. This industry is absolutely not only going to recover, but it is going to grow exponentially. I think essential services mandate means that legalization happens faster than we anticipated. I think it could also be another economic driver to tax and legalize these businesses and allow the massive amount of revenue to come from the black market untaxed to the legal market taxed. So am I concerned about the viability of the cannabis business? Absolutely not. If anything, I think this confirms it further, and to the fact that as vices, consumer staples, and medical industry does better in a downturn. Let's see, better meaning than its comparables. It will obviously have more overall sales as the economy has more sales.
Mm-hmm.
So the first question, the haves versus the have-nots, I think what you're going to see is, to your point, you're going to see a real delineation of good operators versus not good operators, those that rode the cannabis wave and didn't actually know how to run a business versus those that were good fiduciaries and good stewards of capital and of their employees. And we're already starting to see those first wave of people fall out. And there's an opportunity there. Hopefully there are enough investors like us that come in and can save these businesses that have great employees underneath it, probably good underlying products, but have had bad management historically. But I do think we're going to lose quite a few of the businesses, and there will be consolidation across the space.
What do you look at your business prospects?
Yeah, I mean, so for us, we come in and we invest in growth equity companies, so companies that are already doing pretty sizable revenue, and we try to turn them around. So we've done everything from invest in seed stage, very early stage companies in cannabis, to now these later stage companies, and that's because the industry is maturing. So for us, there is literally no better time, in my opinion, than to be an investor in cannabis, putting money to work today, because you have the 1-2 punch of, you know, the cannabis reset in the public markets, then the fact that we had coronavirus, which is continuing to depress valuations. So you get to buy in at good prices as opposed to inflated ones. And in tandem with that, you get to ride this continued, you know, lower valuation until legalization happens. So for us, this is a market that we're really excited about, and why we're raising capital to invest in these companies today and take over those companies that aren't run very well and make them titans of their respective sectors.
Well, unfortunately, Cody, we're out of time. It's a great conversation, and we'll get it on the air as soon as we possibly can. We've been speaking with Cody Sanchez. And how can people get a hold of you to find out about your firm and maybe talk to you about working with you?
Sure. So they can reach me at LinkedIn, I think is the best. I'm really active on there. It's Cody, C-O-D-I-E, and Sanchez, S-A-N-C-H-E-Z, and Entourage Effect Capital. If you guys want to play in the cannabis space or want to chat about it, reach out to us.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Cody. Wonderful conversation. I know we all learned a lot, and I did, and thank you for your time.
You're listening to America's Cannabis Conversation on W420RadioNetwork.com. Your new cannabis electronic checking account can offer you PIN secure credit and debit cards for your clients. We can place a cashless ATM at your checkout counter, which reduces the amount of cash on hand. Did you know that we can help you bring legacy cash into your new cannabis electronic checking account? No more paying with cash. Making payments with your electronic check is safe and secure. So if you find yourself up at night worrying about somebody breaking in and stealing your cash, consider a cannabis electronic checking account. To find out if a cannabis electronic checking account is right for you, call 888-420-8884 and ask for Dan Perkins. That's 888-420-8884. 420-8844. W420RadioNetwork.com.
Welcome to the conversation, and joining us today is a gentleman, an attorney from Greenspoon and Marker, who has been on the show before. And I wanted him back because I wanted to talk to him about a couple of things. How has the slowdown affected his practice and the industry, and what does he think it's going to look like on the other side? So, Nick Richards, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Dan, for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to your audience. So the slowdown has shifted my practice, which is generally tax controversy, to kind of more of some tax planning and helping people understand their eligibility for the special programs that have been coming out. I was just on an earlier webinar with a company called Work, that is the payroll provider for a lot of cannabis companies out there. And so I was on that webinar talking about the availability of the CARES Act credits and also the PPP small business loans to the industry.
Now, it would seem to me, Nick, that as I understand what happened here is that many, if not all, states that had medical marijuana considered the medical marijuana dispensaries to be critical and allowed them to be open. But some states either greatly restricted or closed the recreational side of the business. Is that a fair assessment?
I think that is a fair assessment. Of course, each state has, you know, is a little different. Here in Colorado, they, you know, at first the governor declared all dispensaries to be critical, and then the mayor of Denver actually closed down the recreational dispensaries and the liquor stores, by the way. And that lasted for about 2 hours, and there was riots in the streets. And so then he came back on, and he allowed the adult use dispensaries to do curbside deliveries and liquor stores to remain open, and it remains that way to this day.
So I have been reading anecdotally. I'm learning that that anecdotally doesn't mean what it used to mean with all the statistics that we're getting on the virus. But I've read anecdotally that some areas of the country are still doing pretty good business.
I think that, you know, in the early days when we heard that we were going to get stay-at-home orders here in Colorado, cannabis companies saw sales even higher than they enjoyed at 420, which is a big cannabis buying day. So yeah, sales went up, and it was a nice little bonus for those cannabis companies that were able to accommodate those sales. I think there was a little bit of sort of irresponsibility by some of those companies in not maintaining social distancing. And I think that, of course, has changed now. And, you know, the question is, can you maintain social distancing and still do that kind of volume when you have to have 6 feet between people, only maybe one person in the actual dispensary at a time and stuff like that? So a lot of people mm-hmm. have told me that their sales could be a lot higher if in fact they had a different kind of facility that would allow them to serve more patients at a time.
Right. I mean, it's I live here on Sanibel Island, Florida, and all the places that are closed, even the post office now has shields over the tellers. And here's one, my favorite McDonald's drive-thru now has a shield over the payment window so that the attendant is wearing a mask. But do you have any instinct, I know you're very, this is a big part of your practice and your firm's one of the biggest in the industry, if not the biggest. Let's talk a little bit about how it is. You said that you're doing more tax planning, and help our audience understand what are the kind of things that you're doing and why.
Yeah, so let's talk first about the PPP and the small business loans. You know, a lot of people are interested in whether they're qualifying for those loans or not. And so I'm answering a lot of questions about that. And then I'll switch right now to the CARES Act employee retention credit. Getting a lot of questions about that as well. That's a pretty complicated piece of legislation. There's five or six different little credits that all add up to a pretty big credit. The bottom line is that the Small Business Administration came out with a tweet the night that the CARES Act passed, and they said that cannabis companies do not qualify for those loans. Then later, when the regulations came out, that was included in those regulations. And so, you know, it's cannabis companies going to be pretty hard pressed to get those loans. The legislation is not specific in saying that cannabis companies don't qualify, but you know, good luck getting a banker to take a chance. I think that's where the rubber really hits the road, right? I mean, a bank is not going to take that risk when the SBA president came out and tweeted that cannabis companies don't qualify. Now, that's the PPP loan I'm talking about. The employee retention credits, we believe that cannabis companies do qualify for those credits. And, you know, that said, we don't have a specific statement from the IRS on whether or not they qualify. And, you know, you could look to 280E. 280E does say that it disallows all credits and deductions. But there's a number of reasons why we think that these credits and deductions, these credits would be allowed. Specifically, they apply to employees that, you know, are primarily staying home and not working. So Section 280E applies to expenses in trafficking in a controlled substance. And if you're staying home, you're not trafficking in a controlled substance. So there's a very good argument that that marijuana companies do qualify for the credits. And I should add that hemp companies and ancillary companies, non-marijuana licensed companies, also would apply for the PPP small business loans as well. A bank that's reached out to me and is facilitating those loans for my clients and is looking for people to apply through them. So any of your listeners that need a bank partner in that, I've got someone for them.
So let's just stop for a second and ask the question, how do our listeners get a hold of you to start the process of working with that bank? Excuse me.
Yeah, so my email is nick.richards@gmlaw.com, nick.richards@gmlaw.com, and my phone number is 720-370-1169. That's the direct line to my desk at my law firm.
If I'm correct, the payroll continuation loans are much larger than the $10,000 maximum income loan.
Yeah, correct. Those loans can be up to, if you only qualify if you're 500, if you're less than 500 employees, and it's 10,000 per employee. So those loans can get up to, if my math is right, what's that, $999,000 or $499,000.
But in addition to payroll, as I understand it, you can take rent, mortgage payments, pension funds, contributions. So those can be, depending upon the size, you're correct, 500 employees, the maximum. But I've heard that you could create a scenario where you could have a company that could be looking at millions of dollars in loan guarantees.
I think that's right. And those are forgivable loans too.
Yeah. If you comply with the terms and you make payroll for whatever period of time, the loans are forgiven. So if I'm a banker, what risk do I really have?
Yeah, I know. I've been asking myself that question as well. You know, I think in context of the question of, you know, what risk do I have if I loan to a marijuana company, I think the risk there that banks would be looking at, and I'm not a banker, so I'm just thinking out loud here, but I think that they would be worried about losing their only certain banks can make these SBA loans, and so they would be worried about losing that status.
Mm, okay, that's something to consider. But the reaction from what I've heard to both of these programs is such that they're virtually going to have to appropriate, and they're talking about doing it on Thursday, that they're going to have to appropriate another $200 billion to this program because so many people have applied. And
the CARES Act too they're talking about, right?
Right. And I'm one of those people that is applying. I'm a small businessman, one person shop, for me, and we have other people in the production company. Let's move on to the question. Do you think a lot of people are assuming that they won't qualify for either and they're not filing? Or are there a lot of people filing on hopes that they might get something?
You know, my experience with the cannabis industry is they're pretty well connected. And so, I don't know how many calls I got when the CARES Act came out, but people were already fairly well informed about whether or not they applied. So I think people know that they probably know that they don't qualify for the small business loans, but they probably also know that they may qualify for the credits. And Dan, there's a form 7200 that's a brand new form that can be used to actually claim get an actual check. So for example, if your credit is equal to $10,000 but your employment tax is only $5,000, well, you take the credit against your employment tax, keep that $5,000, which by the way you have to pay some of that back later down the road. But then you also can get a check for the net difference, right? And that's what the form 7200 that you would use to request that check.
In the moment we have left, let's just go over that one more time. The form 7200 is a new form, you said?
Yes, sir.
How do I use the 7200? Why do I want to use it?
You want to use it to claim So again, if your credit is 10,000 and your employment tax is only 5,000, you're entitled to get a check for that other 5,000 that you cannot use in your employment taxes. And the form 7200 is what you use to get that cash. The IRS sends you a check.
Okay, so that, and I can get that 7200 online at irs.gov?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. Boy, this went by fast. We thank you for joining us. How do people get in touch with you?
Thank you, Dan. Again, my phone number is 720-370-1169, and my email is nick.richards@gmlaw.com. That's N-I-C-K period R-I-C-H-A-R-D-S at gmlaw.com.
We've been speaking with Nick Richards today of Greenspoon and Martyr, law firm out of Denver, one of the biggest in the country. And his specialty is dealing with taxation and cannabis companies. Thank you for joining us today, Nick.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate the opportunity.
And we'll be right back.
Introducing the new Cannabis Electronic Checking Account. Did you know that in 2019, almost one in five dispensaries were either robbed or broken into? Your business is cash only, because up to now, you didn't have access to a banking account that would allow you to deposit the daily receipts from your business. Some owners have started a banking relationship only to be told in a few months that the institution was closing the account. For the first time, you can now have a reliable business checking account. Yes, I said a secure bank electronic checking account. For more information, call 1-888-420-8844 and ask for Dan Perkins. That's 888-420-8884 and ask for Dan Perkins. W420RadioNetwork.com.
Joining us today is a gentleman who we've had on the show before, Thorsten Rudolph from the University of Iowa Healthcare. And today we want to talk about what he wants to talk about, and that is the use of cannabis to treat MS. So, doctor, I know that in our previous conversation, this was an important subject to you. So why don't you tell us why it's important to you?
Yeah, so I'm studying multiple sclerosis for a long time, and it is a disease we don't know the reasons and the causes of MS, and especially I was interested in fatigue in these patients, so I did a lot of research in patients with multiple sclerosis for some years, and a couple of years ago some physical therapists approached me, and also neurologists, and they told me, yes, these patients, they are using now medical marijuana to treat their symptoms. And I was very surprised, and I didn't expect this. So I started to research this area, and I found out that already 70% of all patients with MS are using medical cannabis to treat their symptoms, such as neuropathic pain and muscle spasticity. So this is how I got involved in MS research and medical cannabis. And so my concern is that these patients, they don't have any guidelines how to use medical marijuana. And this is the goal of one of my goals in my research, to provide these patients with good guidelines, which products to use, good ratios of THC and CBD, which ratio is most effective to treat the symptoms like pain and muscle spasticity without any side effects. So this is my goal in my MS research.
So it's, I have to tell you, doctor, it's shocking to me that that you found out that 70% of the people who have MS are already using cannabis?
Yes, Yes, this is based on a questionnaire, and this is also published. I did an online questionnaire, sent it out to people with MS, and by the way, also patients with Parkinson's disease. And this is what came back, right? That it was between 60% and 70%. They are already using cannabis, right? This was very interesting.
Were you shocked?
I was shocked, yes. Again, because they don't know how to use it, right? So this is self-medication, right? And the other thing is my other concern is, I mean, these patients, it's either multiple sclerosis or Parkinson's disease, they are using a lot of other medications, a lot of other drugs, right? So when they are using medical cannabis or medical marijuana on top of these things, we don't know the interactions between these drugs. So definitely there is more research needed, right? But also, I got very interesting responses from these patients. Anecdotal reports, very strong anecdotal reports. I have patients with MS. After they tried medical marijuana, they were able to stop all their other medication, right, and just used medical marijuana, and they are doing fine. This is, of course, very encouraging. But we have to back up these anecdotal reports with some solid research, right? This is important.
Doctor, what you're saying is what I've heard from other people who are suffering from things other than MF. I had a gentleman on our show early on who was a Navy SEAL that had been injured 9 times, and he was on opioids to deal with his pain, and he was finally got a medical discharge because he couldn't really function because he was addicted to opioids. But the government turned him out, and his family did an intervention, took him to a doctor that helped him begin to deal with cannabis. And in 60 days, he had reduced his opioid consumption by half. And at the end of 2 years, he had gotten rid of all of his narcotic pain reliever and was simply using cannabis. It just seems to me that I'm having a hard time getting my head around the success, whether it's your MS patients or other patients who were addicted to pharmacy pills that were creating tremendous side effects. And yet they can come off of this stuff and go on to cannabis and continue to lead a drug-free life with just the naturalness of cannabis. Do you have any idea why this particular vegetable, as some people call it, cannabis, why it is so powerful to affect so many different diseases with one particular strain of cannabis?
That's a good question. So what are the mechanisms here? Again, this is what I'm trying to find out. It seems that specific brain regions are more or less affected by these compounds, by THC and CBD, and this is what we try to find out. We still don't understand the mechanisms of medical cannabis. And also, we're always talking about THC and CBD, but, you know, this plant, the cannabis plant, has so much more compounds, hundreds of other compounds which are interacting with each other. This is definitely a research question we have to find out. We cannot just say, okay, it's working and we are doing fine. The next step is also to answer the question why, right? This is what I'm trying to find out with my brain imaging, for example. I found out, for example, when I scan the brain of cannabis users and non-users, that different brain regions are activated. Yeah, so in medical marijuana users, brain regions are that which reduce anxiety, reduce depression. So specific brain regions are responsible for these things, right? And I've shown in one of my previous studies that CBD is helping these patients who have anxiety and depression. So there's more, this is just a start, but definitely more research needs to be done here.
So if I heard you correctly, doctor, you said that CBD also provides relief in some areas, yet typically CBD has a very, very low THC level. So is it other than THC that makes CBD work?
Definitely. I mean, both have positive effects, right? CBD and THC. I mean, CBD, I see this high CBD products has positive effects of anxiety, depression, also sleep disorders. So I would recommend, for example, when patients have these symptoms, I would recommend a higher CBD product. However, there should be some THC in it, right? So around 0.3%, I think there is some interaction going on between CBD and THC. So you need a little bit amount of THC to make CBD work, right? In patients with pain, I see that we need a little bit more THC in this product. Right now, I'm thinking the best ratio is 1:1, right? 1:1 THC and CBD to have a positive effect of on pain relief.
So we're speaking with Dr. Thorsten Rudolph. You are not the first doctor that I've talked to on the air who believes that less may be better than more. I've talked to a number of researchers and physicians who believe that we can get the all the benefits we need with a diminished amount of THC in the products that we are consuming. And your research that you're doing on cognitive behavior, which we talked about in the last time you were on the show, you're out to try and prove that. But intuitively, do you believe that we may even be over medicating ourselves on THC with cannabis today?
Medicating with THC?
I'm saying, do you think that there may be people who are over-medicating themselves with too much THC, get better results or equal results with less consumption?
Yes, I think so. So right now, when you look at the products which are out there, there is so much THC in there. I don't think to treat symptoms like pain and spasticity, we don't need this high amount of THC. I think 1:1 ratio is enough. And also, let me say one thing is many older people, they have some problems with the cardiovascular system, right? Heart problems. And I'm a little bit concerned when these patients are using high THC products, that this will maybe cause heart problems. There are some studies out there. So I would be very careful with very high THC products.
Some researchers that I've talked to, doctor, say that how one gets the CBD into their system affects the efficacy of the THC to solve a problem. If we go through the gut, that diminishes what's happening. If we go under the tongue into the blood system, that's very effective, or smokable product in the lungs. Do you believe that how we take it has an impact on its effectiveness?
Oh, that's also a good question. So again, I mean, there are not many studies out there, right? We don't have a scientific evidence which one is better. Right now, I think the best thing is to use tablets or tinctures or so. Then you know how much you are taking, right? And smoking medical marijuana, I'm a bit skeptical. It's still smoking, right? It's not good for the lungs, right? So
yes.
I'm more for tablets and tinctures and things like that, rather than smoking.
How do you feel about edibles?
Anyway, yeah, I mean, there's also, I mean, it's the dosage, and it's very difficult, and every person is different, right? For some mm-hmm. people, for some people, it might work, for others not, right? I mean, the only thing is to have a product where it clearly states what is in this product. Start with a high CBD edible, for example, and then see how your body reacts to it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, unfortunately, Doctor, we're out of time. First of all, let me thank you for sharing your knowledge and your passion and your desire to help people. We'll look forward to hearing more about your other study. And how do people get a hold of you and follow what you're doing?
I mean, the best thing is to send me an email, or maybe you can provide your people with a link to my webpage. My webpage
sure.
is always up to date, and there I'll post any new findings and updates on my research.
We would be happy to do that. We will put a link to your website and your webpage on America's Cannabis Conversation and make sure that everybody gets a chance to see it. Thank you for joining us today. It's my pleasure.
Yeah. Thank you very much for having me. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for joining the conversation today, and we'll be right back.
America's newest and fastest growing cannabis-focused radio network is expanding across the country and looking to add to our sales and marketing team. America's Cannabis Conversation offers listeners insight and information on the exploding world of cannabis. It also gives advertisers the opportunity to reach a hyper-targeted audience, literally neighborhood by neighborhood, in markets all across the country. We're looking for a few motivated individuals that want to essentially run their own local business in markets like Boston, Las Vegas, Reno, Orlando, and more. To learn more about this exciting opportunity or to apply, visit americascannabisconversation.com.
Welcome back to The Conversation, and joining us today is Stuart Tomk, and he is with a very interesting company called CV Science. Their specialty is CBD products. And I wanted him on because he's got a lot of things he's going to talk about, so we're going to cover a lot of information. So stay awake and stay tuned. Stuart, welcome to the conversation.
Mr. Perkins, it's a pleasure to be on your show, and I was listening to some of your past episodes, and before we get started, I just want to tell your audience, your resident doctor, Dr. Jordan Tischler, gets a two thumbs up from our medical and scientific advisory team here at CV Sciences. You're putting together an incredible format. I love how diligent you are about information in general, and to have a doctor as classically trained and as cool as Dr. Jordan is, I will be a regular listener to your show.
Thank you so much. We really enjoy having him on. He does. He's very honest, down to earth, and tries to make whatever he has to say understandable for all of us, regardless of our education. Stuart, your company is a very progressive company in the area of CBD. I'm a believer in it, as we've talked in the pre-show. Tell our listeners, first of all, where we can get to see your products, but also about what your company's trying to do.
Okay. Well, we are a publicly traded company. The ticker is CVSI, Charlie Victor Sam Indigo. We've been in business since before 2012, so in the cannabinoid CBD business, that's really a very, very long time. We
True.
Were one of the first, if not the first, commercially available CBD products on health food store shelves, which is where everybody seems to be going to try to sell their CBD products. And just as a quick aside, many of us here at CV Sciences came from the dietary supplement industry. For example, my boss, Dr. Douglas Mackay, ND, is the former senior vice president, scientific and regulatory affairs for the largest trade organization in the world dealing with supplements called the Council for Responsible Nutrition, the CRN. So many of us here came from the supplement space. I cut my teeth working with Dr. Ingram selling oil of oregano over 20 years ago, before that working in a health food store, and then I worked for 10 years at Nordic Naturals as their spokesperson and national educator. So we were really had an advantage, a material advantage, that we were bringing hemp extracts into health food stores in 2014, and we understood what it took to make dietary supplements, meaning we helped to fund the Farm Bill. The first legal seed in the ground belonged to CB Sciences. That's all historically important and exciting. Today, since we're faced with the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, CB Sciences sees ourselves in a very unique position because we are at the table with FDA. My boss, Dr. Duffy, says if you're not at the table, right, you're on the plate, you're being served, you're not sitting there. So we have regular meetings with FDA. We've published formal toxicology work. We're a known entity on every level in the CBD space, and members of the important trade organizations like the American Herbal Product Association. I mentioned the Council for Responsible Nutrition. We helped to start the entire hemp roundtable, the U.S. Hemp Roundtable, which helped to get the Farm Bill passed with Jonathan Miller, the lawyer down in Kentucky. So our roots go deep. We like to call ourselves grass tops instead of grassroots. And we're a very, very well-oiled machine in a day and age where CBD is barely understood.
There's a lot that's misunderstood. I think one of the things that bothers me the most about, not about CBD, but about the industry in general. I had on the show a couple months ago the chief litigator for the Federal Trade Commission, and he was talking about these outlandish claims that some of these CBD people are making about their products, and it cures cancer and dementia and Alzheimer's and everything else. And I just saw literally yesterday where the Attorney General of the state of New York is going after another one who's not even calling it a CBD product. It's they can't find any CBD listing on the label, yet it's on a website with CBD product. And so I get asked a lot, how do I know if what I'm buying is what's really inside the bottle? And how does your company make that promise and keep that promise to your consumers?
Well, you're making a very important point. We have a laboratory here with in-house cannabinoid testing. So the first thing is that there is not yet a universally agreed upon standard and methodology for testing cannabinoids. So that opens it up to some interpretation. That being said, the products that we test, which is everything in the market, for the most part, we're not doing well as an industry. There are just too many people that do not understand quality assurance, quality control, and they're not ready. They're not good manufacturing practice certified. They're not ready for an FDA inspection and invasion. And so, first of all, you want to make sure whatever product you're taking, if it's a cannabinoid today, and it's a company and not the gray market, that the company is ready for the FDA. So you need to look at the package, look for the QR code. We have a scannable QR code on our packaging nationwide that takes you to a certificate of analysis, so that you can see for yourself that it actually has what's in the bottle. So those two things, is it what it is purported to be, number one, and number two, is it safe? We're not allowed to go on to number three and tell you how many milligrams of CBD you need for which condition. No, that's the difference between supplements and medicine. So you're right. Most people aren't getting what they're paying for, number one. Number two, unless you have published safety data on PubMed.gov, and until you have a letter of independent toxicologists who review your scientific evidence demonstrating in writing, a panel signing off, that your product is safe for human use, you may want to avoid those products, because CB Sciences, our products are in 3,800 health food stores, and we can ship it to everybody's door. So we're not the only company that's doing it like this. I want to be fair. We're the only company I am aware of that's doing it like this.
Let me throw you a myth. And I'm not saying that you were representing anything wrong. We see that a lot of organizations say it's available in all 50 states. And that's partially true. From a federal standpoint, it has been cleared and approved for sale. But there are, I think, now three or four states that still haven't changed their regulations to allow the sale of CBD. I'm thinking Iowa's one, and I can't remember the other two or three. But this all came about because of the Farm Bill. And you said earlier in our discussion, you were at the table with the Farm Bill. Why was that so important, not only to you, but to all of us, to get that Farm Bill passed?
Well, the Farm Bill had to pass to put the FDA in charge. And the reason we've been in this conundrum is nobody knew who was in charge. So the Farm Bill, once and for all, liberated all parts of the hemp plant. The earlier version of the hemp plant had the seed, the stem, and the stalk, the cake, the sterilized seeds, you know, not the resin. So there was a lot of confusion around which part of the plant could you use. And we were deriving ours from the seed and the stem and the stalk with huge biomass. And then that was debated by DEA and investigators. In any case, the Farm Bill passed once and for all, liberating cannabis sativa L and all of its derivatives at 0.3% THC by dry weight of the leaf. And you might have caught this. I know I can tell you you're following this very closely. Many people this year decided to ignore the Farm Bill. Hemp growers decided to ignore the Farm Bill and go for the older Farm Bill because there are more stringent THC testing standards in the most recent Farm Bill. So I love that in terms of states' rights. We're going to move backwards. How about we have a law that we like that was older? So in any case, to get to the point, the Farm Bill needed to pass to take the DEA once and for all out of the equation, and now it's the Food and Drug Administration. So if it's an extract from a plant and it's intended to have some biological activity, the DEA now is out of charge. They're out of control because not only is it no longer a scheduled substance, even the pharmaceutically approved CBD is no longer a controlled substance. The point is now it's the Food and Drug Administration. So any CBD hawker that you listen to, make sure that they have FDA expertise because the DEA is out of the way.
Let's talk a little bit about the ideas behind the development of your product line.
Yes. So we began with the end in mind. We knew that CBD is an ingredient in hemp that's gained tremendous popularity and that emerging research suggests may be beneficial in the area of stress, recovery, sleep, and possibly even anxiety. Consumers of our plus CBD, as we call it, are reporting feeling more satisfied and more rested because we took the great idea and we subjected it to rigorous testing. Our ingredient is supported by independent published scientific evidence supporting the safety of our product. So the safety studies were also reviewed by a panel of independent toxicologists. So when you get our plus CBD 15 milligram gold soft gel, the number one selling soft gel in the market today, you know it is safe. You know it has been tested by independent experts and that what we say is on the label is in the bottle.
We know that from research that the number one reason people are buying both CBD and cannabis products is pain. And number two is anxiety or depression. How does your product line fit into those huge needs of American consumers?
Well, on the stress side, we know for sure that stress hormones shut down the immune system so that you can run for your life. And we have a paper that's published on PubMed right now. We have a paper that's published on PubMed that actually shows the anti-anxiety properties of our product. So if you go to pubmed.gov and you type in Scott Shannon et al., the largest open label pilot trial using a CBD product commercially available for anxiety was conducted on our product.
Where do people go to buy your product, Stuart?
Well, we're in independent health food stores and pharmacies across the country. We're even in larger places like Kroger, and that's very difficult to get into because of their regulatory compliance teams and lawyers and so forth. But any independent health food store carries Plus CBD, and you can also purchase it on our website at pluscbdoil.com.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time, and we're going to have to continue this on another segment. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show, and we've been talking to Stuart Tomk, who's just he's the vice president in charge of human nutrition for CV Science. And I encourage you to go to their website, look around, look at their research, look at their papers. I think they can help you a great deal. Stuart, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Thank you, Mr. Perkins.
If you didn't hear all of our interview with Stuart, you can go to W420RadioNetwork.com and go to the archive section and pick up a show that Stuart's on or any other show. And by the way, starting this past week, we're on every day with a special episode, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday segments, our guests like Stuart. And then we have a weekend update of what's happening in quick news. We're going to have a midweek update in quick news. So you can get us now six times a week on W420RadioNetwork.com.
Thank you for taking part in America's Cannabis Conversation. To hear this show in its entirety or to hear any of our archive shows, log on to americascannabisconversation.com and tune in next Saturday at 4:20 p.m. for the next installment of America's Cannabis Conversation.